Hello and welcome to Travels to a Kingdom. It's Kaya Flynn with you until 7 this evening, and I do hope I find you well. How are you keeping? How was your week? And what did you get up to? Do let me know. What did I get up to this week? I was in Clarnia quite a few times this week, recording bits and pieces, which should be coming out on Travels to a Kingdom over the next while. Where else did I go? I went to Listowel to see the wonderful Bernard Casey on Friday night, and that was an absolutely brilliant show altogether. Very funny man, and I'd recommend you go and see him as well. What did you get up to for the week? Did you go to the 4th of July festival, which was celebration in Clarnia? I didn't get to go that evening, but I did see some stuff on social media and it looked fairly fun altogether. And you can see as well the atmosphere of a lot of American tourists coming over at the moment. It's brilliant and it's marvellous to have these, you know, this tourism coming back. You know, we've obviously missed it over the last while, so it's always special. And I've noticed as well over the last couple of weeks, I can't remember the last time I went to Inch Beach, but I went about maybe 6 weeks ago, and I was talking away to a few people, and there was a lot of people from Germany and America and stuff like that, and they always talk about how beautiful Kerry is and how much beautiful Ireland is. So it's always lovely to hear from them as well. And I wonder, do I actually have any American listeners? If I do, please, if you mind, would you send me an email to kflynn@radiokerry.ie? I'd love to hear from you, and I'd love to know why you tune into Radio Kerry and what is it that we offer you that keeps you tuning in. I'd love to get to know you. I know Sean Riley has a good few American listeners and he absolutely adores them as well and has a lovely personal connection with each and every one of his listeners, really. It's just a lovely way to connect with listeners in that sense. So, yeah, we all have personal connection with you. I have anyone that tunes into Travels to a Kingdom, I absolutely respect you and thank you so much. It always means a lot to me, especially when I'm only not, how many months am I at this? 7 months? So it's absolutely fantastic. Meanwhile, we do have a very busy show for you tonight, so I do hope you can stay with me here on Radio Kerry until 7 this evening. Unless your nerves are still shattered from the Dublin versus Kerry match, hopefully you can relax now a bit and we'll tune into something completely different, not football-wise at all. So coming up, you will hear a recording I did with singers Sean Keane and Anne-Marie O'Riordan. I did a while ago at the Timeless and Irish concert in the Teen Ton Theatre in Ballybunion. We will listen back to the archive of Sean Hurley and we will share some stories with you as well. But first on tonight's show, we are going to hear from four gentlemen that love to tell a story. I travelled out to the lovely Ballyhigh, which hasn't been featured yet on Travels to a Kingdom, to meet John Flahive, Patrick Casey, Brendan Moriarty and Pat Sheehan. And they tell us the story of Ballyhigh. But first we are going to hear from John Flahive, who tells us a story.
This is a story about a man in Ballyhigh, Pat was his name. And he had about 7 acres of land, and he had around 4 cows, and he was keep on the cattle. But anyway, this fella from Tipperary, he was John Ryan, he used to always come to Ballyhigh on holidays. And Tipperary is a county for hurling and everything, but he had no interest in hurling, it was all farming. And he'd go into Flahive's pub because the farmers just go in there. They used to be talking about farming, he used to love talking about farming. But this day anyway, early in the day, he went into Pat Flahive's and he had a pint, and Pat came in, the small farmer, and he sat down on the stool and got a pint, and John Ryan went over to him and was talking, and he said, "What do you work at?" Pat said, "I'm a farmer." "Oh, the same as me," he said. "I'm a farmer as well." "And where are you from?" "I'm from Tipperary. And have you much land?" "I have 1,010 acres, she said. "And what do you do?" She said, "Well, I'm a farmer as well." And he didn't ask him how many acres he had. But "That's a lot of land to have," Pat said. "Oh, it is. And how are you fixed with your silage?" "I have 140 acres of silage in now. And I have 80 acres of hay cut." "And how are you fixed?" he said to Pat. "Well, I'm in the very same position as you. I have about half of it in." "And that's half of it down all the time." And Pat said to him, "That you must have a pile of mouths to eat all that silage." "Oh," he said, "I have. I'm milking 400 cows. And they keeps all the calves until they're about 2 years, rears them up. That takes some feeding, Pat said. You must be a busy man in the winter. Oh no, he said, I have this big machine. And there is a shovel in front of it, and to lift 2 ton at a time into a dating feeder, and to mix up the silage and beat it all together, and I'll drive along the passage of the shed, and I'll feed 200 cattle, and I'll load it again and come down the other side and feed 200 more. Oh God, that's great for Pat, said. Well, how do you feed your cattle, he said to Pat. Well, he said, I have a bean tin at home. Do you know the bean tins you'd have for the beans for your dinner? And I'd fill that with beef nuts twice a day, give it to the cattle twice a day, that full.
That was good feed.
So that's the story.
That's a true story.
Later you want one about the mine, so...
Go on, let's tell us about the mine.
It was in 1940, the time of the Second World War. And it was back in Kerryhead. This mine came in, and it was spotted by a man called Pat Halloran and Patsy Flav. They were the two of the side. It was about 100 yards that came from the cliff. And they reported it. There was a Cauchwash camp at the back of where I live now, but I wasn't born at all that day. And it was manned that time by course watchers, two at the time in every shift. And well, they were supposed to have seen it because they had spyglasses and everything, but they didn't, they missed it. And but they rang up the army, and the army came out, 2 lorry loads of army men. And they went down and they saw it, and they had to get in there, but to take him out with a canoe, he was neat hussy. And they took out this big cable and they connected it to the fuse of the mine, and they brought it way up the fields near a ditch, and they lay down near the ditch. But two of the army men had to go around to all the houses and tied off, and they taught them lying on the floor in their bellies, that the explosion could knock them from to the explode. So they hardly down anywhere, and the explosion went off, and there was hanging dressers that time in the horses, the old horses, mm-hmm. and they fell off the horses and down the wear and all got broken. Mm-hmm. And there was one horse that had a horse tied to the side of the stable, and then the gable fell out, and he pulled the major and all out and went off the road. With the other. My father and grandfather and grandmother, they had a dog. His name was Sailor. And when the dresser and all fell down in the explosion, he went around the house, back in, and they opened the door and out he went. And they just didn't see him anymore. Mm. But there was a travelling man. He was Mickey in Landers. You were here, Mickey in Landers. Mm-hmm. He used to come about once every 6 months. And of course, the end of the head, he was tinned up there, and he was sleeping in my grandfather and grandmother's house in the corner in straw. He wouldn't sleep any other place but in straw. And the dog, you sleep alongside him, saying they were mad about him. And they had no more about Sailor, but after 6 months, didn't Mickey and Landers come? And he said, why did he give away that nice dog, my pit? And I sleep in there, he'll sleep with me. Well, they said, they told him the story. Well, he said, I was coming through Lizelton yesterday, and the dog ran down the path I was going up to the house and jumped up with him.
Same dog?
He went, same, went, he ended up in Lizelton. The fright he got.
And that was John Flahaugh telling us a few of the stories around Ballyhaig. And now we're going to hear from Patrick Casey, who tells us about the shipwrecks that happened in Ballyhaig a number of years ago.
The shipwrecks here, like, there was about three along here. The first one here, the outline is still there. That was the Catherine Richards. The next one then was the Mary Ann. Mm-hmm. She, and then the other one then was the Golden Lion. The Golden Lion was the Danish ship that was bringing the silver to from Copenhagen to, it was bringing it to somewhere, and it just to pay the soldiers around South Africa they were there, and it was shipwrecked here. What they used to do was to lure the ships in that time was that they tie a lantern to a horse's head. And the horse would be grazing his head, it'd be up and down, the light would be flashing, you know. The ship would come that direction then, like, so the Golden Lion, and I see that in the book, just built as L-I-O, and it was not, it is L-Y-O-N. That was the correct spelling of the Golden Lion. That was wrecked here, and all the silver was taken up to the Crosby's up here in the castle.
Oh, wow. When did that happen?
That happened in, the silver, it was raided then, the castle was raided, and the silver was taken, mm-hmm. and it was supposed to be buried.
They said even the Crosby's were involved in it.
Sure, well. I knew it wasn't buried. It went up to Arfurt, it went up to the Crosby's in Arfurt, he was a rector, he got an awful lot of it, and it was buried here and there. But this lady Crosby then, her husband died mm-hmm. after the, he was supposed to kill himself, do you know, trying to save the Danes. Mm-hmm. But then they had to pay him so much a day for keeping him. But he died anyway, he got no money or something, and he died, and it was the lady Crosby then was in charge, and then she had these, it's on the book, like, she had it was all arranged, like, and then there was a raid in the castle one night, and there was two of the Danish sailors killed, like, in the raid. And the rest of them were upstairs, and they were locked in the stadium there because they suffered. And they could see the whole rest of the silver being taken away out down square with the down out the castle gate with the in you know, horses and they could do nothing about it. That saga went on for years and years and years, didn't it?
There was a court case about it.
There was a court case about it, but it came to.
Did he do any favours to Ballyhaig in a money point of view?
Oh, I'd say not, but
they...
No.
They said that some of the silver is still buried above the castle.
I don't think so.
People can go and
they were saying that, all right, but I'd say it's gone.
We'll have to go with our metal detector, so...
it's gone, like, but... See, the Crosby's, like, they were in our fit, like, and Ballyhaig Castle. That was a long, low thatched building, wasn't it? It was over.
In 1730, it was done up in 1830.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it was Morrison that designed the castle, wasn't it? The one that's there
now. That's right.
And that was designed for back over near where the Coast Guard station was. It wasn't designed for there at all, like. Mm-hmm. But it was there it was. There were the two. It was all Arfurt in the beginning, but then the two parishes were divided, like they separated. And Ballyhaig then were here, and they had the equine farm, the horse farm, which is above Newtland Island, which is made out of the avenue actually. But that was the horse farm. There was a great house there as well. Mm-hmm. And the rent had to be collected from the farm or something, the tenants around, like. Mm-hmm. And they were there then, and they sold it. They left, and it was bought back by the Cantlins again. The Cantlins were the Crosbys. They acquired the Cantlins and actually evicted them. Oh, wow. And they'll be getting cattle and all here, like.
Wow.
But they're, they bought it back again. And there's, well, there's no cattle in there now, I'm sure.
You're rid
of them. No, they're all gone again, like, well, just different people. Do you know that? Well, there's cattle there, but they're not in the farm. Do you know, like?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, of course. And I suppose the castle would be a big place for people to go visiting as well, to tell the story of that as well, would it?
Well, it was... The castle was burned in 1920. It was burned by the IRA because the Black and Tan, and the auxiliaries, they had people in turn there. Mm-hmm. And when they left, they thought that, because they'd come back again to the time of the Free State, like, and the IRA burned it.
21st of May 1921. It was 100 years burned last year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And now Brenda Moriarty shares a story about Ballyhigh Castle.
The staff in the castle were minding it while the Crosbys were away. Mm-hmm. And they mustn't have been minding it properly. The mm-hmm. lights, which were candles at the time, were left lighting, and the actual castle went up. So it was actually burned twice.
Oh my God. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
There must have been some construction into that.
Yeah. It was attached castle in the 1700s, mm-hmm. and then in 1830, as Patrick says, Morrison got the job of as architect. Mm-hmm. But Morrison didn't do it himself. He got his 15-year-old son to actually do the diagrams, and as you can see, even today, that he made a great job of it, really. Mm-hmm. There was a square tower before that. The Cantlins had a square tower, mm-hmm. and he put a round tower then, and he did away with the thatch. The thatch was there since 1720, and he put in 1830, he put the slate on the castle, and there was supposed to be 365 windows in the castle.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
One for every day of the year.
That's it. And then coming on to, we'll say the 1900s, the Crosbys knew the writing what was on the wall at that particular stage, and J.D. Crosby wanted to get out, really, but his sister didn't want to sell the castle. So in 1913, J.D. Crosby actually said he wanted to sell it, and they were going to sell it to Jerry Lean for $5,500. But his sister didn't want to sell it, so they held on to it again until 1921. And in 1921, then they actually sold it to Jerry Halloran for $4,000. Mm-hmm. Pounds. That was
Jerry Lean that sold it
To who did I say?
Jerry Lean that sold it.
Oh, Jerry Lean. They actually sold it to Jerry Lean. And just after being sold, in case the English would come back again, the place was burned down a couple of days later.
Oh my God.
Uh-huh. But there was supposed to be an auction of all the furniture in the castle a couple, 3 days before, we'll say, it was burned down,
mm-hmm.
and that auction took place, and there's furniture from the castle. In fact, the table that's above in the sacristy in Ballyhigh is actually from the castle.
Oh, wow.
My grandfather, who was in the post office at the time, got it, but it was the priest, Father, I think it was Father Alman at the time, reckoned it was too big for our sitting room.
Yes.
So he said it looked lovely above in his sitting room. So he swapped the table that was in the sacristy for the one in the post office. And I have the one in the sacristy still back in my house.
Oh, wow. Geez, that must be amazing to have. That's an artifact, like.
It is. But there's furniture from the castle all over the place, really, like that. Mm-hmm. It went to different houses throughout the county.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that the story that makes Ballyhigh, do you think?
The castle? Well, to see the situation with I suppose one of the biggest things in Ballyhig at the moment is the golf course. Mm-hmm. It's a lovely 9-hole golf course. If you can play Ballyhig, it's probably the best 9-hole golf course in Ireland, really, like that. If you can play Ballyhig, you can play anywhere at all. It's a beautiful golf course altogether. So people coming to Ballyhig, it's good for, of course, the Strand then is the big thing, really. Mm-hmm. Walking to the Black Rock would be a huge thing, really.
And that was John Flahov, Patrick Casey, Brendan Moriarty and Pat Sheehan, who wouldn't speak because he was a bit of a blow-in, he said, because he was a Causeway man, but was definitely there and had a good influence on all of us, speaking to me a while ago about the lovely Ballyhig. And if you have any thoughts on that or any memories of Ballyhig, do make sure to get in touch with me. You can do so by emailing me on kflynn@radiokerry.ie. Now, we need to go to a quick break, but after this break, we'll be back with more on Travis to a Kingdom. And you're very welcome back to this evening's Travis to a Kingdom. Do get in touch. You can do so by emailing me, kflynn@radiokerry.ie. Now, on last week's programme, we had Joe Harrington on from Lawyer Compon, and he gave me, himself and Kay actually gave me an issue of the Lawyer Compon and District Journal. And I was flicking through it. There's a lovely amount of stories on it. Very interesting. A lot of what happens in the community and whatnot. It's a nice little magazine as well. But I just noticed there was a story in it, and it's called An Ancient Paddle from Knocknagoshal. So I'll just read it out to you there. Around 1988, David O'Connor found what is now described as a paddle 3 feet below the surface in Mortimer O'Donoghue's bog. While it was broken, it was about 3 feet long, compressing a flat wooden blade and a handle. It wasn't realised, understandably, that it was extremely old, and it remained cast aside in Mortimer's shed until 2009, by which time the handle was lost and the remaining part had dried out. Marie O'Sullivan, a member of the Kerry Archaeological and History Society, became aware of its existence and advised that it was to be offered to Kerry County Museum. Sarah Jane Hogan made a line drawing of the object, and it was treated for woodworm at Muckra's house, which is very fascinating. The paddle had been found in the townland of Loch Fowder, and it has been determined that it was made from hazel. The surviving part of the paddle, now in Kerry County Museum, is about 14 inches by 3 inches by 1.5 inches. A lot of inches there. This paddle does not resemble the two other paddles found elsewhere in Kerry, but it is similar to a number of river and crannog finds in County Antrim, according to Griffin Murray of Kerry County Museum in an article in the Journal of the Kerry Archaeological and History Society. And there's a little image of what it looks like as well, so it's quite interesting. And that's, I suppose that's something interesting about bogland as well, the way everything is preserved. Okay, I could be completely wrong here, but wasn't there a saying as well that, like, you could preserve meats and stuff, obviously wrapped up in bogs, and they wouldn't go off? Or am I absolutely making that up? Do let me know. But it was definitely an interesting little read when I was reading, flicking through it. But definitely worth looking into these little books. And I suppose for communities as well, we should all look into doing a little journal like this, just to highlight what goes on or the history of our own areas, community events. And it's just a lovely memory to look back on years to come as well. So a big thank you to Joe and Kay for that little journal as well. And no doubt I'll be pulling this out throughout the next couple of weeks for the programme as well, because there's just lovely little pieces there. I just actually flicked through there and I saw an image of Lorraine Nash as well, and she's a talented singer as well, so we'll be reading more pieces from that over the next coming weeks. Now, as I mentioned at the start of the show, we recently held the Timeless and Irish concert in the Teen Ton Theatre in Ballybunion, and we were at the Teen Ton Theatre on Travis to a Kingdom a couple of months ago as well, and you can look back at that interview on Travels to a Kingdom on radiokerry.ie, and you can get the podcast there where I spoke to some of the members of the place and what the theatre means to Ballybunion. Billy Dunnigan was our MC, and we had a sold out night, and I met a few people in the audience as well, and it was lovely to meet you as well. It was great to some people, you know, when you hear the, oh, I listen into your show, it's a lovely feeling to have. So thanks very much to everyone that spoke to me on the night. And we had lovely pictures on our Radio Kerry Facebook page as well. And there'll be another concert coming up there on Wednesday the 10th of August with Dermot Moriarty for another Sounds Country concert in the Teen Ton Theatre. So you can look up on our Facebook page as well. You can find out more details about that. Now, two of the performers of on the night were Anne-Marie O'Riordan and Sean Keane. And I spoke to both of them. First, we'll hear from Anne-Marie, who had just performed at this point. And this recording was obviously taken before her wedding that week. And I want to say a big congratulations to herself and her husband, Anthony. And I also spoke to Sean Keane before he performed on the night and asked him what it was like to be singing in Ballybunion. But first, we'll hear from Anne-Marie. Anne-Marie, how did you get on at the Teen Town Theatre in Ballybunion?
Well, it was a fantastic atmosphere, such a sold out concert, and it was lovely to look at everyone in front and clapping and singing along. So it's been a great night so far, and it's only the start of it.
Mm-hmm. You came down from Cork today and you're going back up?
I am indeed. Eric, you know what? I live in the Kerry Diocese, so we're not too far away at all, and it's a beautiful drive anyway. So we'd come back to Ballybunion anyway, to the beach every so often to inhale the fine air. So yeah. No harm going back home now again tonight, because I've a few jobs to be doing because I'm getting married now soon enough. So
soon enough, you
soon
say?
Enough,
is,
yeah.
Is it this Saturday?
It might be this Saturday, all right, yeah. Do I seem a bit too relaxed about it? I said, you know what, law fall into place. I'm sure if he turns up and I turn up, sure, that's half the battle. So
That's exactly it. This is your first time at the Teen Town, is it?
It actually is, and I was thinking, where in Ballybunion is it? Because I know I've come back to Ballybunion so many times, but it's such a beautiful setting. As we look around here, it's just gorgeous. So it's a lovely venue to sing in. And sure, no wonder, sure, Radio Kerry know the best spots to perform in anyway. So fair play, it's
we know
lovely.
The best performers to bring on too.
Oh, I don't know. Thank you very much. Actually, Billy was saying that the first concert, the first time Shiner's concert he did in Brandon 8 years ago, I was singing on first, and the same here tonight. So yeah. It's great to see it kind of coming around again, and that we're all here together and still singing together.
I was actually going to ask you about that, Anne-Marie. How does it feel, you know, 8 years on, that you are first on again and Billy's still there?
Well, I noticed that the microphone height was the same, so I haven't grown any taller. I don't know if I've grown much wiser either, but do you know what? It's great. I suppose it's really at this stage now, everyone's like a family that performs here. We all get on so well. Like, I'm sure you noticed there, Kai, when they're coming in, everyone is like greeting each other, like, oh my gosh, we haven't seen you in a while. And it's just like a real, I think Billy brings all lovely, friendly atmosphere as well, and he's so good to bring everyone together. So it is an honour to be performing here with such wonderful artists and for an amazing crowd. And of course, talking to you as well, Kai. You're a mighty interview. You make it so easy to chat away, because it's so you make it so informal and so
Thank you,
nice. So.
And you sang a beautiful song tonight and you got the crowd going, which is lovely. Isn't that just a lovely thing to be able to do?
I suppose, do you know what? I suppose I'm singing. I remember my first song at a station mass when I was about 4 or 5, and I was mad to sing, like, and I was so shy as a little girl, but when I'd sing, I used to come into my own. It was my thing once I go up on stage, or once I felt my stage could be just at home with a brush and singing into the glass case or something. But I suppose it's the feedback you get. It's a great feeling, like, it's better than anything. I'm a teetotaler. I never broke my pledge, and I think it's the best high you could ever get is singing on stage and to get the reaction to people. And I suppose songs have the power to evoke fond memories for people that they think of. Oh, I remember when I first heard that song, I was going to dance, or I was driving somewhere. It's like songs are very powerful, and they can be very sad for some people or very happy. But I saw everyone interprets singing and songs a different way, and I hope they enjoy that they're now tonight anyway. They seem to be singing along, so that's the best I could hope for.
Definitely. Anne-Marie, it was lovely to talk to you again, and safe travels back up to Cork, and best of luck on your wedding day.
Oh, thank you very much, Kaya. Thanks to everyone in Radio Kerry for all the continued support.
Yeah. Sean, where are you coming from?
I am from Cathalestine in County Galway.
Did you come down from Galway to Ballybunion today?
Oh, absolutely, I did. And what a beautiful day to travel.
Very good. Are you staying tonight?
No, unfortunately, we have to be back for the morning. So we are heading off after the concert here in Ballybunion tonight.
Oh, my God. I'm speechless at that. How does it feel to be here in Ballybunion at Teen Town?
It's great. It's lovely. It's 3 years, and standing here outside at the back door, it feels like 6 months ago since we were last here. Mm-hmm. But we had, of course, the pandemic and all the lockdown and everything, and we're here again. And it's great to be back. And it's great to see that the Teen Town is up doing concerts, and everybody is out. It's full house in there, and everybody looks to be in great form, and they're all up for it. They're glad to be out.
Mm-hmm. What are you performing tonight?
I'm doing a few songs with the Ryan Turner Band. They're the anchor band tonight. I'm doing Stranger to the Rain. I am doing Isle of Hope, Isle of Tears, written by Brendan Graham. I am doing a song called Never Alone, which was written by a band from America called Lady Antebellum. and I am doing an old folk song from America called Bury Me Beneath the Willow.
Is there any particular reason why you chose those songs tonight?
Yes, kind of. It's the songs that we did them here 2 years ago, and the band had them all off, and I had them all off, and we ran them at the sound check, and so they're just, we could pick any amount of songs, but they're songs that people like to sing along with too, and they're kind of favourites for the audience. So that's what we do those.
Speaking of audience, how do you find the Kerry audience?
Ah, they're brilliant. Amazing. Sure, look at the proof of the pudding is here tonight. They're all out. It's a full house. It's great. I love coming down here and playing. It's a wonderful part of the country.
So was it 3 years ago since you were last down in Kerry performing, or have you been down recently?
Oh, no. I have been down recently. I have been... Where was I last? Well, I was kind of in North Cork now, which wouldn't matter at all. Definitely not. Definitely not. I'm trying to think where was I in Kerry. I was over in Abbeyfield in the theatre there. Where else was I around Kerry in the last while? I was down during the lockdown, when the whole country and most musicians were at home twiddling their thumbs, like I was for a lot of the time. I was invited to take part in an initiative that was conjured up by a guy called Gerald Peregrine, who's a cellist with the RTE Concert Orchestra. And he got a brainwave of, because nobody could go and visit nursing homes or people that they had in nursing homes, a neighbour asked him in Dublin, would he play a concert in the back garden, which gave him, sparked off a little nucleus of an idea that he pursued, he got backing for, and I think he has about 400 or 500 concerts done in nursing homes all over the country. Yeah.
That's a beautiful initiative.
It is, yeah. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And to see the expressions on the people's faces when we did go in, because there had been months without any company whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So there was just such satisfaction for me. I had been sitting around for a year, and all of a sudden there was an outlet for what we do, and to get together with a few more musicians and to do concerts, it was just great. It was a joy.
How did you feel being a part of that?
Oh, sure, it was just magic. It was magic, because we did two nursing homes a day. Some of them we couldn't really get into them at the time, but a lot of them had double doors that they were open out, and we would put a speaker inside. We always made it happen. And in fairness to all the people in the nursing homes, they made it happen as well, because they knew how beneficial it was for the people. It brought some kind of life and joy to the place, you know, that hadn't been in it for months because of COVID.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
And that was Anne-Marie O'Riordan and Sean Keane speaking to me at the recent Timeless and Irish concert at the Teinton Theatre in Ballybunion. We must go to a quick break, but after a break, we'll be listening back to the archive of Sean Hurley. Do stay tuned. Welcome back. Now it's time to play the archive of Sean Hurley. And this week's piece comes from when Sean met Gerald Fitzgerald in Carrigsaveen.
To Carrigsaveen next, where we met the late Gerald Fitzgerald and Jonah Murphy. Gerald was a former CIE employee for a while back in the 1940s, and he had memories of being a steam riser on the old steam engines, and much more.
My father was an engine driver, my brother was a fireman, and I was a steam riser for a while there.
You're the steam riser. Now, will you explain that to a 30-year-old who might be listening into this programme tonight, because he wouldn't have a clue what a steam riser was. Yeah. What was a steam riser?
You had a cold engine, you had to clean the fires, get a new fire on, and have steam race. You'd have to have the sand boxes filled with dry sand, and clean out the smoke boxes, they would call it. Right. And,
it was like boiling a kettle. There was a big tank of water there, and you had to put down a fire underneath the kettle, shall we say, and to create the steam that powered the engine.
You had two types of engines that time down here. It started off with a tank engine coming down the branch line here from Tralee, and then you had the superheated, and then you had saturated engines before the superheating came in. You had to get the engine prepared and call them in the morning at 5 o'clock. That was your job.
That was it. Just to settle an argument, what time did the ghost train go to Dublin at?
Around 12 o'clock, maybe before 12. It was a big night, teachers full of drink and sandwiches and playing cards up along. Of course, they couldn't be back again till the following day, you know.
That was, of course, for a football match.
You see, I mean, things weren't like there now, 3 hours to Dublin from Killarney. So that time, in the normal run of trains, you'd have to change in Mallow, change in Farn 4 first, if we were going from Castlegreen to Dublin. We'd have to change in Farn 4, take a train, then to Mallow, change in Mallow, get on the Cork train. You could leave here at 7 o'clock in the morning. You wouldn't be in Dublin for 3 o'clock in the day.
And as Jonah Murphy knows, you could be in for first mass on a Sunday morning in Dublin at 8 o'clock.
You would.
You'd barely make the 8 o'clock mass.
And that was the archive of Sean Hardy, which we broadcast here every week on Travis True at Kingdom. And I do hope you enjoyed that piece as well. A big thank you to John Flahive, Patrick Casey, Brendan Moriarty and Pat Sheehan for coming on to the programme and sharing their stories and memories. To Anne-Marie O'Riordan and Sean Keane for speaking to me at the concert as well. And of course for you for tuning in as well. If you want to get in touch with me at any stage during the week, you can do so by emailing me, caitlin@radiokerry.ie. I'd love to hear from you. Stay tuned here on Radio Kerry as Elaine Kinsella is on the way with 7 days, looking back what's happened here on Radio Kerry over the last week. And then Sean Riley is on his way with his Irish favourites. So do stay tuned and have the cup of tea ready for you. So until next Sunday, do take care of yourself and I'll talk to you then.